No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Good to be with you again for our weekly show, Ken. Feeling pretty optimistic about the Ravens' chances now after maybe their best win of the season in Minnesota on last Sunday.
Good win, certainly. It wasn't a real dominant win, but it probably was not as close as the score would indicate either. I thought they outplayed the Vikings considerably. I do think I'm a little concerned, and I want to get your take on this, that other teams are adopting a more uniform approach to trying to contain Lamar Jackson. He had his worst game of the season and only had two ample time and space opportunities out of 30 throws. So crowding the line of scrimmage and going after Lamar with numbers seemed to be something Flores was more than happy to do again.
Yep, and we've seen that throughout his career, really, not consistently, but in the postseason, certainly. This is when the Ravens need to come with their counterpunch, and maybe that's spreading teams out a little bit more and not having so many tight, heavy formations. That's what I would recommend, at least.
Yeah, they do seem to want to get tighter when they face the rush, but when you face the rush, you're always one short. That's the deal. You have a quarterback who gets the ball, so the defense always has one more on the edge if they want to assign only one to each coverage, to each player who needs to be covered.
So, quick game though was pretty good, I thought, and that is, you know, the way to kind of counteract some of that aggressiveness from the defensive coordinators.
Yeah, you would hope so. And he was not bad with the ball out quickly. A couple drops by the tight ends in particular were very significant. The drop by Flowers, I don't think it was quite as bad because it was behind the line of scrimmage. I don't think it was going to be a positive play. And then there are some people who tell you that the ball in the end zone dropped by Bateman was a drop. I wouldn't. I'd say it was well behind him, but it was a ball that an extraordinary play could have been made on.
Yes. So we'll see how they fare against this Cleveland Browns team, which is not a great team, but they will have one of the best, if not the best, defensive lines in the league. It will be a challenge going for their first sweep of the Browns, I think, three of the last 4 years, they've lost in Cleveland, something close to that at least.
Yeah, they have lost three of the last four. One transaction that we know about, we were just going all over the roster before the show and noting that it appears the Ravens have 54 players on their roster. Taven Bryan, we think, has been elevated to the 53. I've reported that previously on this show, and it's listed that way on the website, on the roster. But then, I mean, you look at the 53, they're actually a 54. So we're not 100% sure of exactly what's up with Taven Bryan. He may not have been activated to the 53. They may have that in the plan. It may have been done inaccurately, and they may still have a move to make. But the big move last week, I guess it was on Saturday, this occurred after our show. It was after our show anyway, was Sanusi Kane was cut and Keandre Jackson was added to the roster.
Well, we had that on our show, but Sanusi has now recommitted to the team with coming back to the practice squad. So I guess that's good. Maybe it makes you question why they released Ruben Lowry before Kane, if Lowry was scooped up and Kane wasn't, but that's probably a different topic. So Sanusi could get an elevation this week, depending on how the special teams units come together, considering some of the injuries that they've suffered recently.
Yeah, a tough injury report for the Ravens. And maybe we get into that right now. The good news is that Lamar Jackson was back at practice today on a full basis. I think When I see full next to Lamar Jackson, I'm going to take it to mean full now after what's happened to Ravens with in recent times.
Yeah, I highly doubt they're going to get let that become an issue again. So let's go to Thursday. Rashad Bateman was a DNP, did not participate for the second straight game, or second straight day, excuse me, with a reportedly high ankle sprain on a questionable hip drop tackle. Mike Green is limited with an ankle on Thursday. Jay Higgins did not participate on Wednesday or Thursday with a knee. Justice Hill, 2 days in a row, he was off the field with a toe. Marlon Humphrey had his finger pinned, so he is already been ruled out for this week. But then Lamar Jackson's full, and then three other players that were limited on Wednesday, Isaiah Likely, Keaton Mitchell, and Malachi Starks were also full on Thursday.
Very big names. In fact, very big names up and down that injury report. The only one who's not a huge name is Higgins, who might have been one of the players who was cut for Brian, but was not was on the injury report this list. So obviously that didn't happen, and we'll have to see what's going on. Bateman, a big loss. This maybe is an opportunity for Tez Walker to get a little playing time.
Yes, I would presume so. A little bit disappointed that Tez hasn't had an opportunity to play the last few weeks, so this could be his chance. And I'm not sure. I don't think it would be a huge drop-off considering the way Tez played early in the season. Marlon leaves them a little bit thin at corner. They pretty much have four healthy corners now, so you could see TJ Tampa getting into the mix potentially on Sunday against Cleveland as well.
Are you including Keon Martin in that group? So Martin, Tampa, Awuzie,
Wiggins,
and that's it.
That's it, because Alexander was the sixth, and he's actually now retired or at least stepped away from the game for the rest of the season.
What a weird situation. Just it's got so much Ricky Williams written all over it. I don't know what.
Also, you know, this could be an opportunity for Rasheen Ali to play if Justice Hill cannot get back on the field. Toe injuries can be serious. They don't sound serious. They ended Jonathan Ogden's career. So, Ali did not dress last week for the first time this season, and the roster composition was almost perfect as far as having enough players everywhere, but now he may get a chance to come back in. And I would agree with you. I think Higgins probably was landed on IR, and that maybe hasn't quite trickled down to us yet because the corresponding move with Taven Bryan.
Okay, well, I don't think that move has been – the Taven Bryan move has actually been made because Higgins is on an injury report this week, and that would really be outside the rule set to be, saying guys not practicing. So we'll see how this plays out, but it sounds like there's probably a pretty good chance that Higgins is the guy who is missing for that.
The other player I could see potentially being activated would be Lawson, who has been with the team for about a month now and has not been caught up yet. But when you see what Ojabo has been giving you, I think Lawson, and with Green dinged up at least, you want to have a little bit more capable depth there in case Green gets nicked up during the game again.
Yeah, I mean, that speaks to really having a fifth player there, a fifth player, an outside linebacker, which might mean Lawson is activated and it's possible that he would take Higgins' spot and they would have to just kind of make do on special teams with having Lawson in there as a big, even though I don't think that's nearly ideal to have. They could do it. So, we probably ought to talk about one of the big activations last week, which we obviously haven't had a chance to talk about last week, which is Carson Vinson active over Joe Noteboom at left tackle. Now, let's clear this up here, because Joe Noteboom was a healthy scratch this last week, as far as we know. He didn't show up on any injury report, hasn't been on any injury report this week. He's not the guy that left for Taven Bryan, as far as we know. So, he's still on the team. He is inactive last week, and that is a monumental move to have Vincent active over Noteboom. Carries potentially tremendous portent about where they think Vincent is in terms of his readiness at left tackle.
For sure. He's been on the fast track of the developmental curve so far this season, going back to the preseason, and he has, you know, worlds of ability. He needs development, and he's apparently been gaining that. I saw him out there on, you know, blocking for a point after attempt, which is really the only action that the backups get. But it would be great if you can have Vincent now be your swing tackle, or eventually step in for Ronnie, starting in two games. But the fact that Ronnie, as banged up as Ronnie has been this year, that they opted for Vincent over Nopum definitely speaks loudly.
Big deal. It is enormous, folks. I just, these kind of moves do not get made lightly. I would have been still surprised by it, but less so if they had activated two backup tackles in this game too, to have Nopum and Vincent active, mm-hmm. and go with four, even though that's not a typical composition. You see, usually 5-3 is a typical IOL offensive tackle composition. So this is a really big deal. And if you did a 4-4, it might be an indication that both your tackles are banged up, or that one of your backups is banged up too, and you don't completely trust your depth. But this was extremely surprising.
Yep, for sure. Yeah. And then last week we were talking about the roster crunch, and it seems that some of these injuries have now alleviated that concern. So there, mm-hmm. should be a pretty strong 48. Not a lot of guys healthy on the inactive list.
All right, we had questions. We've had lots of questions this year about what to do about the guard situation. I thought we'd take a couple of minutes to just talk about what level of change could be possible if they were going to do something. And let's look at both guard positions for a moment here, because even though Voorhees and Falele have probably been relatively very similar, I would say, in terms of their level of aggregate play for the year, mm-hmm. Falele's done it actually within a much narrower range of outcomes, and Voorhees has been a wider set of, with a number of Bs and a couple Fs and a D thrown in there. He's had a much wider range of outcomes, but I think his position is safer for several reasons. One is he gives the Ravens some mobility from left guard that they've really lacked. And the second is that he's a second-year player with two more years, yes. of runway, which is more important even. So Falele appears to be the one who might be replaced first. I don't think it's necessarily going to happen, but we've had the question come up so often. Let's talk about what might make a reasonable change at guard.
Falele has apparently faded the last couple of weeks a little bit. He was graded higher and was performing better. Lamar's now a little bit banged up with the knee, so you want to have good protection. It does not appear that Ben Cleveland is going to get a chance, really, ever. He's not John Harbaugh's, Falele's John Harbaugh's guy. Ben Cleveland's the opposite of that. But I could see a scenario where Emory Jones would be given a rotational opportunity. And maybe if you really want to press it, you could give Emory Jones a rotational opportunity at left guard and Cleveland at right guard, but it really depends on where the coaches, how they view it.
Yeah. I mean, it might light a fire under the players involved for that to happen. Emory Jones, much more of a right guard in terms of his length and size and whatnot. It would make more sense for him to go there, but Cleveland probably exclusively a right guard, tells you a lot about how safe Voorhees' job is right now. The guy who would likely replace Voorhees might be Bullock. Mm-hmm. And even then, I kind of doubt it.
I'd like to see Bullock. I'd like to see what Bullock can do at center, but not necessarily at guard. Maybe they're in a position where they rest the starters late in the season or something, and that's when he finally gets his chance.
That's certainly possible that they're locked in at, say, the four seed, and in that final, mm-hmm. week they get to rest somebody. A switch at either guard a guard spot seems more or less unlikely at this point, but I will say the leash got a little shorter this last week with a bad game by both players. Voorhees had really earned himself a little leash recently. Falele has been kind of hanging around with a similar amount of leash. I think the soft switch is now the more likely switch that would occur. Would you agree with that? That we more likely see a rotational move rather than a immediate cut bait on Falele and move to a different player?
Yeah, I think so. You don't know what you have in Jones. I mean, he hasn't been playing the preseason at all. So I could see a rotation of Jones and Falele. I agree with you on Voorhees. He's still a younger player. He hasn't been in the system as long as Falele, and they have much more team control, as you mentioned. I think that's really the key piece of the decision-making process.
Yeah. So what they've done in the past some is to have a player not even play alternately by series, but have a player get one series in each half kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't surprise me if they really want to try and do that at the end of games some as well. If they can get a game where they have a 2 or 3 touchdown lead, and looking at the Browns and the Jets, I don't know that's likely against the Browns. I think it's possible against the Jets that they could see a big lead and have the possibility that Bullock gets his first play at center under those circumstances. There was some talk today about how the Ravens are very far away on any kind of a contract with Tyler Linderbaum.
Yes, let's dig into that now because, this is our GM show and we're at midseason, a little bit of a stock report. I was encouraged to hear that they're very far away from Linderbaum. It's been a hot button topic. There's a lot of debate going on right now. I don't think Linderbaum has earned a cornerstone contract. He's the 31st graded pass blocking center. Some people say they want to protecting Lamar is utmost importance. I certainly agree with that. He's been a big part of the problem. And I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that Bullock would be a better pass blocker than Linderbaum if given the opportunity, just because of the size. So, I'm firmly in the anti-Linderbaum camp on this one.
Right. It is definitely an 80% of the player, 20% of the price, maybe almost exactly that in this particular case that you get. Bullock is, it could be 90% of the pass blocker and 60% of the run blocker. It'd be easy to see that kind of thing happening.
Sure.
Bullock certainly has looked pretty good in the preseason. Surprisingly positive. I think the Ravens are probably likely still to draft a center, and where they may actually get some good guidance on where to draft the center if they see a couple games or even 40 snaps out of a Bullock, over the remainder of the season. So I hope they get that far with him. We're going to talk to a few players here, but what's your top number right now on Tyler Linderbaum? What are you willing to pay, or do you think there's not a responsible contract to be given?
I think I wouldn't. My number would insult Linderbaum. I think it'd be $10 million, something like that. Yeah. Just because you have to figure out where you're not going to spend, as you always say. And if you lose Linderbaum, you're definitely sacrificing some second level blocking ability because there's mobility and some of the reach blocking. But I don't think it's terribly difficult to upgrade on the 31st pass blocking center. And I think you could also get potentially fix some of your short yardage problems if you had a bigger body in there.
That's
so I think he's unfortunately one of the guys where his size was always a concern, and it ended up, costing him his potentially that his long-term future with the club.
Yeah. So how do you think not within striking distance is? Do you think the Ravens are offering 14 and Linderbaum wants 20, or do you think it's that sort of level that seem reasonable?
Yeah, something around that, 18 to 20, I think. And I think they're probably closer to, they're definitely under 15, I would imagine. We don't have privy to that. But that's what I would think. He's not had a good year. And he has been a big contributing factor to the issues on the offensive line.
Okay, so the player who I find to be like really similar in Ravens history is Michael Orr. Mm-hmm. At this point, he was a first-round draft pick, of course, drafted almost exactly the same pick. I think Orr was 23 and Linderbaum 25. And Orr, I think, probably fumbled away a Hall of Fame career by demanding to move to left tackle. He was a right tackle as a rookie year. He had to play some left tackle that year because Gaither was out. Gaither was, for all of the crap Gaither put this team through, he was a hellaciously good left tackle in there for 2 years. And then they moved Orr over there, and the difference was night and day in 2009 between where he played well and when he didn't. He played much better at right tackle, and they decided in 2010 that he was going to take over for Gaither at left tackle. And then Gaither all of a sudden had a mysterious injury occur. and had to sit out the season. Frustrating as hell. he came back and he played four games with the Chargers, kind of swindled them out of a 4-year deal for $24 million. And then he threw his life away after that, or threw his career down the toilet, I should say, after that. But Orr never could play right tackle, and he never could play left tackle. It had to be moved back to right tackle for the 2012 postseason, then stayed there in 2013. But damn it, he really wanted to be a left tackle, and he wanted to sign somewhere where he could play left tackle. And he did. And then he just turned in a very pedestrian career. And it was one where I think he could have been a really great right tackle if he'd have stayed there.
Yeah. It's so similar to Orlando Brown Jr. as well, right? I'm a left tackle.
Yes.
You know, you're an NFL offensive tackle. Is it really that important to you what side you're on? I don't necessarily agree with that, but it's interesting. So anyway, Linderbaum, a lot of people are up in arms, and they say the offensive line hasn't performed well. How can you subtract from that? But you can't overpay for a replaceable skill set, and you can't overvalue the run game at the expense of the pass game on either side of the ball. The run game is very important, but the passing game is harder to find. The elite pass protectors, the elite pass rushers, more than guys that can block like Mike Flynn, adequately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm completely with you. I think, plus pass blockers are very hard to find. All right, we're going to, before we go into picking some players, and I guess I'm second to pick here, I'm going to give you the entire list of players who are about to hit free agency. It is a long list. Mm-hmm. So, headlined by Travis Jones, Isaiah Likely, Tyler Linderbaum, Mark Andrews, Kyle Van Noy, Daniel Falele, Alohi Gilman, David Ajabo, DeAndre Hopkins, Joe Noteboom, John Jenkins, Patrick Ricard, Tylan Wallace, Charlie Kolar, Jordan Stout, Chidobe Awuzie, Nick Moore, Draymond Jones, Jake Hummel, Ben Cleveland, Brent Urban, and Tyler Huntley. And I would love to say that there were a whole lot of names on that list that just didn't matter. That is an exhaustive list, and most of them are players the Ravens would prefer not to lose. I think the player I think is now number one in terms of importance of signing is Travis Jones. There's been a fair amount out on Twitter these last couple of days about how other, I think it was some report from Fowler actually.
ESPN,
that,
yeah.
Yeah. That the NFC teams or several NFC teams had said he's the guy who could fix our defensive line. And I think they're probably right. He could fix a lot of defensive lines in terms of who he is. They compared him to Dalvin Tomlinson, I should say. Dalvin Tomlinson a couple of years ago had a $14 million AAV contract. Maybe that's 16 or 17 today. That seems like the right range for Travis Jones right now. I think the Ravens better pay it if they have an opportunity to get the deal done at that point.
I agree. He's by far my top priority, and I would probably be okay if they let the majority of the rest of the list go if they are able to retain Travis Jones. We've been waiting for it for years now, and he is now the last few weeks become the three down game wrecker that he could be. I think whether Madubuike is healthy or not, if they thought Madubuike could come back, you still want to sign Travis Jones.
Right.
Those guys don't grow on trees. That interior pressure, is deadly in the postseason in particular. So I would be comfortable up anywhere between 15 and 20.
Okay. All right. Maybe I think I'd agree. I'd go that far, particularly if they can get any kind of favorable terms or an extra year or anything like that would be exciting. In terms of Jones, one of the elements of flexibility he gives you is that you can pair him with Madubuike if Madubuike returns, or you can go out and get a great nose tackle in the draft and turn Travis Jones into a three tech, because that's what he's been basically playing the last few weeks. He still played some nose, don't get me wrong, but when the Ravens have multiple nose players and he's in with Jenkins, he's at the three, for example, and he's perfectly fine doing that. In fact, it's a better position for him in terms of getting that one-on-one matchup more often. So that's exciting. The Ravens have also, this is one thing Zach Orr's been doing and needs to be given significant credit for this, is he's finding ways to get Jones a one-on-one matchup by scheming up with things like simulated pressure and mm-hmm. blitzes that come through the middle of the line to try and make sure they peel off of Jones. So they've done very well with that. Jones has been excelling.
Yeah, he's definitely made himself some money, and I really do hope the Ravens do extend that cornerstone contract to him, because I think he's got the, you know, he has the whole tool, the whole checks all the boxes. So that's the kind of guy you want to take. And I will now go to – so I just to give a little background, Fowler put out a list of the top 25, I think, and Linderbaum was in the top five, and Travis Jones as well as Isaiah Likely were, I think, around 15 or so. I don't have it in front of me. So Isaiah Likely, down season so far after the foot surgery. We've seen that before with Marlon Humphrey, probably something that we should expect from when Tavius Robinson is able to come back, for just a note. I think he's definitely cost himself some money this year. And if you look back on the Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely history, there's not a whole lot of times when they're both putting up stats. It's difficult to have two tight ends excelling at the same time. So I actually think Isaiah Likely at this point might be better off taking a one-year prove-it deal and then trying to get the multi-year contract after that. But, of course, it depends on how he fares down the second half. He has.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Showing a little bit more explosiveness the last couple games.
So, I mean, a one-year prove-it deal, I don't even know what that looks like, but one possibility is that he would get the franchise tag from the Ravens. So they can always impose that on him and pay him, I think it's $13 million or so.
About 14.
$14 million. Okay, so that could be a reasonable solution for the Ravens. One reason that looks awfully good, or at least as a safety net for the Ravens, is that they're losing the entire tight end role. So I don't imagine Charlie Kohler is going to be back. I think it's either Andrews or Likely, but not both. We could have a little discussion about that, because I think Andrews is the next player there. And then I think Patrick Ricard's going to probably have to be replaced. That shouldn't cost a lot of money. They can go with Lucas Scott if they want to. But we're at a point where Ricard's been through a number of injuries now. I just think it's probably time to make that move.
Yeah. All right. So we'll just talk about the whole room then, since it all kind of is weaving together. I think 14 would be a little steep for Likely after what he's shown this year. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be necessarily comfortable with that number. I'd rather say 1 year, $10 million or something along that line. For what it's worth, Andrews has graded the best as the blocker, but I'm not sure how well Father Time is going to treat him if you're looking at a multi-year deal. One out-of-the-box idea is to keep Kohler, as give him a 3-year deal, maybe, 3 years, $18 million, maybe a little more than that. And then you can draft the tight end in the middle rounds, which several teams had good success with in this last draft, and the Ravens have had good success with. Yep. All these guys were drafted in the mid rounds. And you can also maybe not be so 12 personnel predominant. So that's something that I've thought for a long time. Lamar's processing has reached a level where I think you may reap some benefits from spreading the defense out a little bit more.
I'd be okay with that. And I don't think that they're getting so much out of their tight ends this year in particular as they did the last two years. I mean, the throwing to the tight ends was 143 passer rating, 30 touchdowns, one interception. If you don't know those stats by now, listening to my show regularly, you probably should by heart. But they haven't had a real great year this year. In fact, I think Lamar had one interception thrown into a tight end. I think there might have been one interception by Cooper Rush thrown into a tight end too. Not that that matters, but the Cooper not that anything Cooper Rush did matter with the Baltimore Ravens. And I'm going to the past tense on that now. I don't think it would be a terrible idea. It's good from the sense of going with the younger player in terms of Kohler. And I also wouldn't have a problem if they use the franchise tag on Likely. You might be slightly overpaying to do it, and that it gives you a chance if you see Likely's who he was in camp this summer. And he was great in camp. Oh, he looked so good. He was backwards, forwards. He had, seemed to have a catch radius that was astounding. It really looked like he was doing very well until he got hurt. Mm. And that's a shame. I mean, it's just I'm with you. I don't think that Mark Andrews is the right answer at this point. I think, you know, you'd be probably having to give him a 3-year contract at least, and then you'd be betting on who he's going to be at age 33. I'm not really liking that.
Yeah, if you could have Andrews on 1 year, $10 million, that'd be a fine deal. But for a multi-year deal, I think, you know, and he's had some issues with drops, you know, postseason last year and this year as well. So as far as Ricard, I don't see an issue with giving him a veteran salary benefit deal again and seeing if he can hold up. And if he can't, then you pivot to Scott. So, you know, that's small potatoes in comparison to these tight end numbers, I think.
Yeah. One other guy that could get a VSP benefit this next year is Ben Cleveland. Now, I'm not saying it's the right answer, but he is one of the guys who fits the requirement to get that. Jordan Stout would be another. And I think probably Jordan Stout is going to get a better contract than that. He's a free agent.
Punters, I just took a look at it, and I think he's probably in line to make $3-3.5 million. The top punter makes about $4.5 million, I think, or $4 million. So he's in that range. But it is, you know, probably 30% more than the VSP, even what he takes home from that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and he wouldn't want to sign a 1-year deal for that if he could get a multi-year deal at $3 million a year, say. So that would be
having a very good year, obviously. Yeah. So. You're up, I think, right?
I can be. Let's talk about some of the outside linebacker situation, because they got a couple of big names leaving. Kyle Van Noy, I do not see him re-signing with the Ravens. I think he's kind of unhappy with the way he was treated this last year. He hasn't had a particularly good year, so there's that. It'd be interesting because the Ravens are kind of the perfect landing spot for a guy who hasn't had a good year, but the Ravens can use their spidey sense to determine that he's still got something left in the tank, which seems to be incredibly good with these older pass rushers.
Yeah, he has not had a good year, and apparently he asked for a raise, I believe, and was not granted one. I think he's probably a player that is looking to latch on with another contender or contemplating retirement at this point.
Yeah.
Let's go to Woozie. Chidobe Awuzie, because I think he's a player that's earned himself some money this year. He is graded about 15th or so. Had a strong game last week. I think I'd be pretty comfortable giving him a 1-year, $8 million deal based off of how he's played so far this year.
Yeah, that's a lot for a corner his age, obviously, but he's done a lot of very positive things. He has not played full-time yet, but we will probably see down the stretch nearly full-time play from him. Wiggins, we hope, can continue to play as much as he has. And Humphrey, it looks like he might be out 1 week, and he might even be out more, depending on how painful a finger situation is. So Awuzie is certainly in a position where he's likely to eat up a lot of snaps in the foreseeable future. I want to go back and go to Draymond Jones for a second, because he's a guy, obviously, he's here at outside linebacker as a rental in any respect, and the Ravens will hopefully get some good play out of him for starters. It would be actually kind of nice if he didn't record more than one sack or 1.5 sacks, maybe, because at 2 sacks, they have to have a elevation of draft pick. But he's very effective in the first game in terms of getting some pressure and creating opportunity for some other guys. We finally had a swarming pass rush again, you know, something that they had in 23 really tremendously. And they had some in 24 as well. But with 23, they had a lot of first pressures from Clowney and then other guys contributing and finishes and whatnot. And it's just good to see that swarm again with Draymond back on the field.
Yeah, looking at the upcoming schedule, I don't see why that can't continue. There's no really imposing offensive lines. Maybe New England's toughest test as far as an offensive line. But Yeah, Draymond fared well. I think he could be, you know, a mid-level contract player for this team. You don't have to worry about OA anymore, obviously. You don't have, I'm assuming, presuming that Van Noy, this is probably going to be his last season. So if you can get Draymond, we've only seen one game from him. So we obviously need to see a lot more before giving him millions of dollars. But 2 years, $25 million, something like that, $12.5 million, I think that'd probably be pretty fair for if he can continue his play from the first game.
Yeah, that might be about right. I mean, I think people would come to the point of complaining about his sack total the way they did with Owe, but you know, frankly, the expectations of every pass rusher in the system is just outrageous. So
yes,
I don't know that you ever get that. David Ajabo, also at that outside linebacker position, will undoubtedly be gone. I just thought we'd toss that out there really quickly.
Yeah, I think he'll be gone for sure. A couple other names. I'm sorry, did I bring up the last one? No, you brought him up. Let's go to Alohi Gilman, because he was a midseason addition who has helped stabilize the back end. Not a all-star performer, has issues with missed tackles, but I think it's nice to have a veteran presence back there. I want the Ravens to draft the safety in the draft class, but I think, you know, $4 to $5 million for him would be reasonable.
Got to be right player, right price for me. I think he's eminently replaceable. So I wouldn't be too concerned. It's not that he's played badly, or and also it's not a bad thing that he and Hamilton have the Notre Dame connection. It's not a bad thing at all. I just don't put a lot of value on it relative to other players that they could fit in at that spot. You got some really good players. Those guys play around with Hamilton and Malachi Starks now looking like he's going to be a star. That's really important, is the development of Malachi Starks and Mike Green, for that matter, are really important to these judgments about other free agents. We know who Hamilton is. We don't know who Malachi Starks and Mike Green are yet. And we hope we know from these last 2 weeks, because they both played pretty well. I've been saying how high I am on those two guys right now. You could probably add Buchanan to that list as a guy who I think is improving. He actually won the defensive rookie of the month a month early, it looks like.
Yeah. All right. Well, now it's Malachi's turn for this month.
There you go.
So, I think they definitely have the makings of a strong core on defense, especially if they're able to retain Travis, as we touched on at the top. A couple more players I want to touch on, but I think you're up.
Well, Daniel Falele, let's talk about him. I don't think he's there's a reasonable possibility that he returns. I think the Ravens have too much they want to revamp about what's going on. I actually think it might be more likely that a Ben Cleveland would return, just because I don't see a market for him. Ben Cleveland is a potential VSP player too. So he could be a guy who comes back and makes $2.5 million or whatever for next year. And then I think that the Ravens will draft heavily on the interior offensive line. They probably will give a job to Bullock. They'll find a place for Emory Jones, wherever that is, and they'll keep Voorhees, and he'll probably be the incumbent at left guard. That's a pretty good start to things without having to worry about Falele. And I'm not as down as the rest of the fan base is on Falele. I think he's been a decent pass blocker, but he also is a guy who is coming to the end of his first contract, and he may well get a pretty big contract somewhere else. We may be surprised where we were with John Simpson in terms of the deal he gets.
Yeah, I think he might be a better fit somewhere else. I am ready to move on from Falele. There's several players that for the, you know, close to the vet minimum, I'd like to have John Jenkins back. I'd like to have Jake Hummel back. I think he's been that core special teamer that actually has a role as the goal line will that you know, gives him a little something. Brent Urban, obviously. Two other players I want to touch on offense. DeAndre Hopkins would be the first one. I think he's been excellent when given the opportunity, and he's been given limited opportunities, which may be what he prefers at this point of his career. So I think it probably comes down to how far the Ravens go this season, because if they make a deep, deep run, I think he's more incentivized to come back. If they flame out earlier, he may want to go to another team that has a little bit more postseason success.
Yeah. We'll see if Kansas City needs anybody is about what he's looking at. It's not a whole lot.
I think Buffalo because he was already on Kansas City. They let him go. But right. Buffalo's desperate at wide receiver.
They're desperate at wide receiver. You were right. Yeah. I guess I'll go over the no way in hell crowd in terms of the Ravens re-signing them. I think the obvious ones, I don't think Joe Noteboom will be back. I think this kind of a demotion beneath Carson Vinson makes it almost impossible for him to return to the team. Mm-hmm. The market has kind of been set on who he is. I do think Nick Moore will be back just because I think they like to keep the Wolfpack together. I don't think it'll be too much more than a vet man deal, but I think it will be a multi-year deal that gives him a little bit of bonus in there. I don't see an obvious reason why Tyler Huntley will be back, but him getting a signature win like that this year, it's really one of the big ones of his entire career with the Ravens. It's the biggest win. There's no doubt about that. The question was, in 22, he had a win, I think, against the Steelers, and he also had a win against the Falcons to help put him in the playoffs.
I'll take the other side of that. I'd like to see Tyler Huntley brought back as Lamar's backup, if you can get for the right price. Is that $3 million, $4 million? But okay, a little high maybe, but I do think, he showed something. That was one of the best backup performances. I think he did a show on that, best backup performances of any player in Ravens. And you could see that he brought energy to the whole team, really. And he does have that connection, and I do like that camaraderie, as long as you're not overpaying for it.
Are you okay with him being the third quarterback and the Ravens going out and trying to find that guy, say, in the fourth round that they could develop?
I think I'd rather try to use that fourth round pick on a tight end or a pass rusher or a lineman.
We've already seen that the Ravens can't do it in the sixth round. And they've tried a lot, by the way. The Ravens over their history have tried a lot of sixth and seventh round picks. None of them has worked out for them, but Anderson, right? Who am I thinking of?
Derek Anderson.
Yeah, the guy who went to the Browns. Yep. He worked out for somebody, just not for the he's been almost as good as any Browns quarterback, in their history.
Tyrod was a decent backup. He's still in the league, right? He's on the Jets,
was,
I believe.
He was a six, wasn't he? Or was he at UDFA?
I thought he was six.
Okay. You're probably correct.
Was a UDFA.
Yeah. All right. We pretty much went through everybody here. Let's go take some mailbag questions.
Please.
I have three I see here, and you may have additional ones, but let's start with Brian Thomas. It's a great question here that we haven't really contemplated much since the acquisition of Draymond Jones, but where do you see Isaac fitting in when he returns?
Isaac, I think, is going to be primarily a Sam and a special teams contributor, and perhaps takes Jay Higgins' roster spot if that spot is still available and Higgins ends up on IR. I think Isaac probably has a lot of work to do to get up to speed after missing so much time early in his career.
Completely with you on that. I don't see a reason why he wouldn't take a Jabo spot. Isaac has done some decent things against the runs in preseason game, and that's what the Ravens really need is an early season run defender, early down run defender. And they probably would value what Isaac would give them on special teams over Jabo, because Jabo doesn't play any meaningful coverage kind of role, and Isaac has when he's been active. So I think that's what I would see. And it may be a matter of just activation of A over B kind of thing, or it may be a matter of that's where they actually cut the line on Jabo. I don't see him having a contribution that he makes to the compensatory formula.
No,
so I don't think he'll qualify. So we'll see how that goes. Somewhere, Ajabo's going to get another chance, and he's going to play somewhere for one more year, and then he'll probably at least have one more year after that in somebody's camp where he may or may not make the team. But he's not out of chances.
The Chargers, right? Makes perfect sense. Carball and Ortiz and Minter. Yeah, I think he's on. Okay, next question from Kid Rock 20. Can you propose a plan to improve goal line and short yardage attack?
What I saw the Vikings do when the Ravens were set up to effectively do a tush push in this game was something I'd never seen before. But basically, all of the players were angled in one direction. It's almost like they were going to do a zone penetration scheme against the Ravens to do it. And one of the things that happened is Linderbaum jumped back and stood up because he didn't want to get his legs caught up in the thing, which is probably, I think, a good thing for the Ravens. It didn't look good for Linderbaum on the play. It's one of those things that NFL teams are probably getting a little bit better at defending short yardage just out of necessity with what the Eagles and other teams are doing with the tush push. And it probably makes it pretty difficult to improve a short yardage game where you have a lot of problems. So I don't really have a proposal for it. And I'd love to have one. I'd love to say, hey, a sixth offensive lineman will do it. Or, hey, they just need to give the ball to Patrick Ricard like they did last week. I don't think either of those are obvious situations. And they're resorting to trickery now. You know, they had Andrews flip it to Lamar.
To Lamar.
And they failed most of the Henry runs on third and short, it has seemed. So,
To me, it would be to continue to be less predictable. I mean, we saw in the past there was a lot of plays on short yardage where Ricard would leak out and they'd throw the pass to him and no one was expecting it. I think it's a little bit too, Derrick Henry's a big back and we're going to impose our will and knock you back. And it's too predictable with the, 22 personnel and it's heavy, heavy, heavy. Let's try to get a little bit more creative. I think that's part of the solution.
So one thing that we haven't seen in a lot of years now is tackle eligible from the Ravens. Yeah. I don't even remember who the last guy to do it was, but they ought to have that play available. They tried it with Haloti Ngata was actually in the pattern. Remember, he ran all those goal line snaps for about a 3-year period. He was in the pattern four times. Mm-hmm. And the last time he's in the pattern was 10-10-2010. Okay. He was in the pattern on the very first drive and then he missed the first snap of the game. Lost the start in that 10-10-10 game. And that was the end of his career as a goal.
Well, Ogden caught two touchdowns, I think. It was at least one.
Yeah, two. They had, I think, a total of four in the early years. It's like Herman Arvey and some other guys you haven't really heard of that caught one. It might have been 96, because I think Marcia Broda was one of the guys who really liked it. They might have had three and might have even had four in that year of guys who caught a touchdown.
Angelov, is that who you had next,
guy? Yeah, go to it.
I don't have it up.
I've got it here. The Ravens now have six interior defensive linemen. How do you propose they trim the fat? IR Peebles, cut Rush, or cut Noteboom with Vincent seemingly taking over. Also, contract prediction for Travis Jones. He's the priority of our likely that. I think we handled the Travis Jones situation earlier. We'd both be happy. You know, he's an absolutely critical player for the Ravens to bring back, and we both have a pretty loose purse strings on him as opposed to almost every other contract that the Ravens would contemplate. With regard to what you're talking about in the quarterback, I think cut Rush is a possibility to keep six interior defensive linemen. I don't think the Ravens would cut Peebles because he's a rookie. I don't think they would cut Noteboom because he's a backup left tackle. I think you're cutting into too much bone there. And while I don't think Noteboom is, I think the Ravens are kind of making it clear that Noteboom's not the next best player at left tackle. I still don't think he's the guy you cut. As bad as he's played, I think you need to have him around just in case you lose multiple tackles in a game.
Completely agree. It goes back to what's your ideal roster count per position coming into the season. Ideally, you have two quarterbacks and three running backs, especially when you have four tight end / fullbacks. You always want to have 10 linemen. You want to have six receivers, I think, at least five. You're already down to five corners. You only have four outside backers currently. Brian, I'm a little confused why, if Brian's performing better against the pass but not great against the run, then why not give Peebles an opportunity, because he did fare pretty well when he was passing. And you have more team control, so if you can develop him into something, a piece that's going to be valuable next season and beyond, that would be good. But I definitely don't think getting rid of Peebles. I think you trim the fat from QB3 and running back four, assuming Justice Hill is healthy enough to play.
Okay, so I did get word from Jeff Z that the Ravens have not yet activated Taven Bryan officially. So they've got him on their roster, but it's in error. And
interesting.
It's good to hear that directly.
Yeah, that was questionable. So he is at elevations. So if he's going to play again, he does need to be put on the roster. But I don't see anyone on defense. Ojabo, yes, but I think really that spot should go to Lawson, and then maybe Higgins goes to IR. Maybe that's how you make the
They can't go back down to three outside linebackers again. And Mike Green has been on the injury list this week. I mean, it just wouldn't make any sense at all. Okay. So anyway, I think if they keep all four, they keep the fourth, including Lawson. But there's no way it's a Jabo. It's a Jabo for Brian. No way. Yeah.
Agreed.
All right, Voss, always a pleasure doing this show with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online and about your current venture.
Yeah, my pleasure, Ken. I'm on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA. Fiamata is the name of a restaurant we opened in March in Finksburg, Maryland, between Reisterstown and Westminster, and we encourage you to give us a try.
All right. Nice place. I've eaten there a couple times, enjoyed it, enjoyed the pizza. I took a picture. No, I'm sorry. I'm confusing places. Okay. We actually ate in another city. but they cooked the pizza exactly the way I wanted it. It was really well done. And by the way, I got that from Fiamata too. I don't mean to say that it didn't, but I actually took a picture of the pizza so I'd have it on my phone so I could show it to a waitress next time and say, hey, this is how dark I want my pizza on the top to be. So,
yes, anyway. Sir.
All right. Other folks, thanks so much for listening. Really appreciate the loyalty to all the shows and this show in particular. Frankly, the questions are always at a high level, and we appreciate the interest in the show and a lot of the chatter this creates online. For Voss Larikos, this is Ken McKusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.